Welcome to Life Lessons in Unexpected Places. The world is full of teachers if you know how to look and listen. With Asha Nayaswamy, one of the spiritual directors of Ananda Palo Alto and a founding member of Ananda Worldwide. If you enjoy this content and are inspired by the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda and his disciple Swami Kriyananda, find Asha on YouTube, Facebook, Patreon, all podcast directories, and her website, ashajoy.org.
Moral and religious rigidity. People who cling too rigidly to religious dogmas reveal a lack of confidence in their beliefs. They fear questioning, lest their system of thought melt away like a snowman under a hot sun. Wow, that is a very strong statement, and you have to live a little while and have a little bit of experience before you begin to understand that. Truth, in other places, Swamiji said, truth is not afraid of questions. It just simply is, and if it can't bear up under scrutiny, then how can we be so sure it's true? And I suspect you've had experience, maybe not, I certainly have. Sometimes when a person has a very rigid point of view and you question them too deeply and try to get them to be, you know, to answer your rational objections or to give you some sensible response, they will become gradually more and more irritated with you and even angry with you and, you know, accuse you of blasphemy merely because you're simply asking questions. That's all that you're doing. But that reaction is not a reaction of tremendous strength that I really understand my own teaching and can explain it to you. It's the fear of not being able to answer those questions, and also that the very asking of those questions will destabilize what is actually a very fragile hold. It's spiritually speaking, it's considered to be, I don't know whether to use the word, it's very bad karma. It's not good karma to take away a person's faith. Even if you feel that faith is limited and that they could do better than that, if a person is not asking you to help them expand their faith, it's not at all good for you to go in and try to force them to change. And among many reasons why conversion is not really such a good idea, that's one of them. Because if people, there are many different ways, and we all have to go through certain stages, and it just simply isn't our place to be telling people what they ought to feel, and one has to respect it. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I've been part of the Ananda community since 1971, especially during the 70s, it was also, we were part of this sort of back to the land movement, which was happening all over America at that time. People were doing organic gardening and having goat dairies and living simply off the grid, becoming vegetarian, all those things. I was doing all those things, except for the goats. I wasn't really into the goats. We had the goats, but I wasn't into them. Actually, in our community in those days, because we were just building it from the ground up, you generally either went into building, you went into cooking, or you went into growing food. And I went into cooking, so I never learned either to build or how to grow food, but I did learn how to cook it, and vegetarian cooking and so on like that. But all of those were part of a bigger story. Now, our community was deeply grounded also in the practice of meditation and devotion to the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. So we were different in many specific ways, but outwardly we looked like a lot of other people. So a local radio station in the local area wanted somebody to come in and talk about back to the land, because it was a topic that was of wide interest to many people. So I came under that title. And I was going to talk about the barn raising and, you know, the music festivals that we had and just the things that we did that were very, the strawberry patch, you know, just the goats, the whole thing, the goats, the cows, living close to nature, my little trailer, being off the grid, no electricity, building your own home. I had a lot to say. It was great fun. All of it was fabulous. I loved every bit of it. And in the minutes before the program went on the air, this was no major station, it was just local, I'm chatting with my host, and he's very upfront with me, and he tells me that he'd had a pretty rocky upbringing, and he'd ended up pretty heavy into drugs, and I don't remember if he told me that he was homeless for a time, but he'd had a tough time, and he'd gotten bad into, I think, heroin or whatever it was. And he had come out of it by the grace of my Lord Jesus Christ, who had saved him and forgiven his sins and given him the strength to go forward. And I was so happy for him. I mean, because really, he'd been saved by his Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm always thrilled to meet someone who gives the credit to God and his life has gotten better because of it. I didn't tell him hardly anything about my spiritual path because I felt that I could understand his, but I didn't think he could really understand mine. But somehow or another, he did get the idea that I meditated and that there was an Indian guru involved. Maybe it was just on the material he had. So we start the program, and I'm going to go with the goats and the organic gardening and all of that. And somewhere in there, he felt, and I respect it because it was part of his responsibility, he felt that he had to witness for Jesus Christ. So he starts witnessing for Jesus Christ, and he starts talking to me about God as, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes unto the Father except through me. I mean, I knew the Bible too, perhaps not as well as he did, but I also knew it. And I had my own yogic interpretations, and Jesus is one of our gurus, and I'm quite devoted to him. In fact, deeply devoted. I spent all of January of 2020 in Israel, leading pilgrims on around to the holy sites of Israel. It's very deep to me, even then, decades ago. It was very deep, but my understanding of Jesus was quite different from his. And so, and here I am on the horns of a dilemma. I'm on a live radio program, and this man has begun to preach about Jesus Christ. Now, there were many things I could have said that were expansive, that were opening, that were supportive, but did go farther than he could go. But morally, I couldn't do it. Spiritually, I couldn't do it. Because this man, I mean, his alternative to clinging to God with that much force was to be a heroin addict on the street. And I was not going to do anything in the slightest way to dismantle his commitment because he couldn't handle it. You know, his very rigidity was because there was just like, you know, that's all he could take. We couldn't sit back and have an interesting discussion about alternative interpretations. Later in my life, two practicing Episcopal priests, dedicated, very good priests, I mean, very devoted to their Episcopal faith, they became very good friends of mine. And both of them became practicing Kriyabans, and they became very dedicated to the path that Master presented and to Ananda, and continued as priests, because they were secure enough in their devotion to Jesus that they could easily expand and discuss completely alternative points of view. In one case, I remember with one of my friends, I would ask them sometimes when I had questions about Christianity that I didn't know the answers. They knew church history. This man especially, he really knew church history. He had an advanced degree in theology from some Ivy League school. He was very impressive. And so I asked him something, and he gave me an answer. But the answer he gave me was, the full teachings of Jesus Christ were not fully expressed until 300 years after his passing. I just sort of looked at him for a minute. I said, now really, let's think about it. And by this point, I could use this vocabulary. Jesus Christ was a God-realized master. He had a direct revelation. He was the Son of God, meaning he was the complete and true manifestation and heir to infinity. You know, there are many subtle ways to say that, but all of that was true. What Jesus was trying to say by being the Son of God was completely yogic. Christ consciousness is the pure expression of the infinite. And you're telling me that it took 300 years of priests and theologians and historians and academicians to actually know more than Jesus himself knew? And my friend began to laugh. And he said, well, that's what they taught me in theology school. But he was humorous about it. And then even more, he joked, he said, my life was easier before I met you. But you see, but he didn't stop being an Episcopal priest because he was quite comfortable. He just said, there's a few differences. He said, but I can work around them. He was completely at ease. He was very deeply secure in his faith, and therefore he was very interested in expanding his understanding of it, which is all I wanted to bring him. I had no reason to take him away from it. He was serving God as he was meant to serve, and serving it well. In the radio station, that wasn't true. You know, anything that would, you know, in any way destabilize the absolute firm conviction that this man had would have been a crime against his soul, and I wasn't going to do it. And it was fine. I just said finally, your spiritual understanding, my spiritual understanding includes yours, but yours doesn't include mine. So why don't we talk about the organic garden? And then I just refused to engage. He tried to engage me a couple of more times, and I just sat there in silence. We're on live radio, but what did I care? His soul was much more important than anything else that was happening, and I wasn't going to violate it. So when he saw that I absolutely wouldn't do it, then we just went on. And in the end, after it was all over and we were off the air, I again told him just how grateful I was that Christ had rescued him. And how happy I was for him, because that's who he was. So when you are talking to people who are rigid, dogmatic, not reasonable, don't want to hear your reasonable thoughts, just, well, there was a Henry James, who is a metaphysician who would give these very wonderful talks. He lived at least 100 years ago. He was very famous. I believe I have his name correct. Please, I hope I do. And in any case, he was a philosopher of religion. And a woman came up to him afterwards, an older woman after one of his talks. This is probably apocryphal, but this is how it's told. And she said, Dr. James, you're wrong about what you say about the nature of the universe, he said. She said, the fact of the matter is, this planet sits on the back of a giant turtle. And Dr. James says, well, that's very interesting. And what is under that turtle? And she says, well, another giant turtle. And under the second turtle? She says, oh, you're not going to trick me. It's turtles all the way down, which has become, in these contexts, when you're talking to someone and it's turtles all the way down, that just stop. Just stop. There's no point in it. What will you gain? And if such a person is going to make it turtles all the way down, they need to make it turtles all the way down. And God will take care of them. It's the sincerity of our intention, not the sophistication of our theology. And people who are very sophisticated in their theology are often far less sincere in their intention. Or these people are just doing what they have to do in order to learn what they have to learn, in order to continue to expand their awareness. They're looking in the right direction, at least. I don't necessarily, let me say how to think about it, I'm not necessarily inspired by what they're doing, but I understand the need for it. We all have our, we just can only be what we are. If someone is 4, you can't be mad at them because they're not 12. And I think about my life and my understanding in relation to Swami Kriyananda, and I can easily extend a little sympathy and support to the man in the radio station, because Swami Kriyananda, for 45 years that I was with him and continuing to this day, is trying to raise a child into an adult. But let's not be afraid to learn. And whenever we find ourselves afraid that we have to protect a certain point of view, that's a very serious sign. Truth is not afraid of questions. And that's what we really want to remember. Swami says, moral and religious rigidity. People who cling too rigidly to religious dogmas reveal a lack of confidence in their beliefs. They fear questioning, lest their system of thought melt away like a snowman under a hot sun.
Our work is made possible by inspired listeners, so if you feel to support ASHA, you can make a one-time donation, or for unique members-only content, subscribe through Patreon. Blessings, and thank you.